Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 31st, 2026. We begin on the front page with Uptown Normal Underpass Project. Underpass contract still in the works. Council may vote by April 20th on deal for P.J. Herr to take over by Matus Janik. Town officials are continuing to work toward the long-awaited underpass project in Uptown Normal and aiming to finalize a new contract in the hopes of bringing it to council members for a vote as early as April 20th. It all depends on how quickly this gets through the review process and how quickly we're in a position to be able to present an alternative contract, said City Manager Pam Reese on Thursday. Just try to make sure we have everything worked out and can make a really sound recommendation to the council. Following the project's initial contract falling through earlier last month, the town is negotiating with developer P.J. Herr, the project's second lowest bidder, to revisit its bid and keep the project alive. The current draft proposal is estimated at $33.7 million, which is $1.7 million more than the bid from former developer Millstone Weber of St. Charles, Missouri, and about $1.5 million more than P.J. Herr's initial bid of $32.2 million when the project was initially approved in October of 2025. The total cost of the underpass project, as approved by the council, was $40.3 million, approximately 42% more than the previous estimated cost of $28.3 million, and three times the $13 million estimate from 2017. The remaining $8 million of the $43.3 million cost is budgeted for other expenses related to design costs, site preparation, and utility relocation. Normal Public Works Director Ryan Otto said there are still conversations to be had with representatives of P.J. Herr as well as with Union Pacific Railroad on the temporary support structures needed during the initial and ongoing excavation of the underpass. We want to make sure that some of the caveats that are in that bid are worked through Union Pacific, Otto said. They have some ideas on how to save some money, temporary shoring and things like that, and those types of items require specific approval. The town previously reduced costs through a value engineering process when both Millstone Weber and P.J. Herr revised their bids in 2025. If the council approves a revised contract in April, construction could begin in late spring or early summer, Otto said. The first phase of work would focus on the south side of the tracks and include building a pump station to manage water at the site during excavation and construction, the public works director said. Despite the recent delays, the federal funding deadlines for the project remain unchanged, and the project needs to reach substantial completion by June 2027. The $16 million Federal Railroad Administration Build Grant, which is being used for this project, is set to expire on September 30, 2027. We are working through the details on substantial completion right now, Otto said. Conversations with FRA in terms of where they expect the project to be on that September 30th deadline, where they expect our expenditures to be related to our build grant as well. So those conversations are ongoing. At this point, the town has not considered any financial relief for area businesses that would be affected during construction. In neighboring Bloomington, the city has implemented a 50% rebate of the city's portion of sales tax revenue during its ongoing streetscape reconstruction. Reese said the underpass project is expected to be less disruptive than past large-scale redevelopment in Uptown, and construction is expected to be contained to the area near the tracks. Parking on the south side of the tracks is also another area of concern as the project continues, and the town is making a plan to redirect monthly permit holders who have spots that will be affected during construction. We want our businesses in Uptown to be successful. We want guests to continue to come to the museum and to all the other venues here in Uptown. So it will be a partnership, and we'll figure out how to best make that happen, Reese said. Although the project has drawn both support and criticism since it was approved, residents and council members recently have questioned whether it should move forward at all, given the total cost is projected to rise and the timeline has shifted. Reese said the town still has an obligation under the grant agreement to evaluate the project fully before they can go to council and consider shelving the plan. The other thing is this project was intended all along to solve some issues, primarily safety concerns and accessibility concerns, to get to the south side of the tracks, and those concerns still remain valid, Reese said. If we can move forward with the project and find a way that makes sense, we will do that, and then we'll leave it up to the council to decide if that's the right thing to do. Matushchenik also writes, costs adding up, food, hotel taxes up, beginning April 1st. With new taxes pushing up the cost of dining out or staying in hotels in Normal, business owners say they and their customers will feel an impact. There's a lot of belt tightening, and anything that raises the price of anything, it's going to be felt, said Ryan Fiala, owner of D.P. Doe and Fiala Brother Brewery and Beer Hall in Uptown Normal. On April 1st, the town's food and beverage tax will increase from 2% to 2.25%, and the hotel motel tax will rise from 6% to 8%. The Normal Town Council approved the tax rate increases on November 3rd to pay for $12 million in debt associated with the planned Uptown pedestrian underpass to connect Uptown to the planned Uptown South development and allow Amtrak passengers to access both sets of tracks at Uptown Station. The $40.3 million underpass project approved that same night has since been delayed while the town negotiates with the new contractor. Although the food and beverage increase amounts to just a quarter of a percentage point, the total sales tax on prepared food and drinks in Normal will reach 12%. We take the hit directly because we build the taxes into drink prices, Fiala said. Unless we want to bump prices visibly, this takes a quarter of a percent straight out of our pocket. Fiala and several other businesses were notified by the town about the upcoming increases in recent months, but he said they were not approached by the town prior to the changes being presented to the council. And there are still a lot of other questions regarding taxes locally, Fiala added. For example, the town is still collecting a 1% sales tax for McLean County's Mental Health and Public Safety Fund, despite a decision to pause its contribution to the fund, which is under audit. He also noted McLean County Unit 5 is considering closing two schools despite passage of a countywide 1% sales tax for school facilities last year. I'm a Normal resident and taxpayer in addition to a business owner. I obviously think the money could be better spent elsewhere, but at this point, if it's coming, I'm going to root for it, Fiala said of the underpass. I hope it's beautiful and it generates all this synergy between Uptown North and South and spurs the massive development and growth that the mayor and half of the council are foreseeing. Liz Ritter, owner of Nautical Bowls at 112 East Beaufort Street, said the upcoming tax increase has been a bit of frustration because one of her reasons for opening the business almost 2 years ago was to provide Illinois State University students and others a local fresh fruit option at reasonable prices. Already facing rising prices for produce and fuel for truck deliveries, Ritter and other owners are having to reevaluate their financial margins on a weekly basis, she said. Usually, we were able to do it every month or two, but since the cost of everything has gone up, we're doing it every week, said Ritter, who owns a second location in Bloomington's Four Season Health Club on Airport Road. Although she does not know much about the underpass project at this point, Ritter said she does know that Uptown Normal, as it stands, has become a model for other shopping districts in central Illinois and across the state. There are a lot of people looking at Uptown as an example, so why change it? She added. Steve Marf Jaron, who owns Windy City Wieners at 106 East Beaufort Street in Uptown and 116 West Washington Street in Bloomington, said the increase is going to affect a lot of his weekly regulars and even others who may be expecting affordable Chicago fare outside the city. He also questions the town's reasoning for not increasing the total sales tax to help pay off the bond sooner instead of targeting restaurants and bars that primarily sell prepared food. My pulse on the community, I can tell that I haven't run into anyone who is in favor of this or completely understands what's happening, Murph Drin said. I would say the demographics have turned over multiple times throughout this whole process. The underpass has been studied since 2015 and was formally proposed in 2017 with a price tag then of $13 million. Other local business owners like Aaron Theobald, who owns Theo's Micro Creamery with his wife Mindy, just across the street at 107 East Beaufort Street, said he is also seeing the price of vanilla beans and cocoa powder go up, on top of simple dry goods like cups, plastic spoons, and napkins. Theobald said he has already heard from customers who say Theo's is too expensive, but when taking into account all the increases and needing to reach a profit margin, it all adds up. He has even thought about putting a price breakdown on what each tax is on customers' receipts, so when they look at the total cost, they know it's not the business's fault, he told the Pantograph. Unless you're a business owner or in the world of the restaurant industry, most people look at your increase in prices and just assume you're doing it to increase profits. If and when the underpass project moves forward, Theobald said Uptown business owners will have a significant conversation about how the construction will disrupt traffic and whether people will be willing to deal with coming to Uptown to eat or shop. What makes Theobald even more hesitant is that the town council did not vote to consider a sunset clause on the tax to discontinue it after it pays the underpass project's debt service. If we're all signing on for this tax to cover the cost of this, I feel like it should have an end date on it once we reach the amount. I have a feeling the town is going to keep the tax later because they're hoping people forget and they'll just reallocate it to something else, Theobald said. Saeed Saliba, who owns The Rock Restaurant at 203 West North Street, said his main concern is whether the town will keep the additional tax even if the underpass project does not move forward. If I'm the town, I would put everything on hold to figure out what I'm doing first before I start charging people. Because what if the underpass doesn't take effect? And we're charging our customers 0.25% extra, Saliba said. You cannot return that money to the customer. From Capital News, Illinois' Jenna Schweikert, we have, "We need to show solidarity. No Kings protest draws over 1,000 in Springfield." A crowd of more than 1,000 gathered outside the Illinois State Capitol on Saturday to attend the nationwide No Kings demonstrations protesting the Trump administration. As the demonstration began with a rendition of the national anthem, dozens waved variety of colors from pocket-sized American flags to political banners. One man dressed in a Revolution-era uniform held a large Betsy Ross flag that blew in the wind. The gathering featured speeches, musical artists, and crowd chants, ending in a march down Capitol Avenue. Saturday's was the third in the series of protests that began in June 2025 as a counter-protest to President Donald Trump's D.C. birthday parade. The movement grew quickly, attracting millions in the series of nonviolent community-based protests. This was the biggest No Kings protest in Springfield thus far, one attendee said. It was the first time local law enforcement blocked off the street. And with donations, organizers were able to rent food trucks and purchase bandanas for the family-friendly event. Springfield's protest was organized by 50501 Springfield, Illinois, Land of Lincoln Democratic Socialists, and Capital City, Illinois Indivisible. The I'm sorry. The organizers encouraged attendees to get involved in their local communities and at the State House to keep the protest momentum going. Tricia Copeland and Kathy Slater, two attendees, said they came to show people they're not alone, echoing the sentiments of the organizers who called for support of the disenfranchised and discriminated. We need to show our solidarity and the fact that we do not agree with what's going on, Copeland said. We all need to do something where we are, the way we can, to make a difference. In the growing crowd on 2nd Street, several stopped to take pictures of a woman wearing a cardboard cutout of a bell that read, "No King, It's a USA Thing." A terrier trotting along wore a sign that said, "Bad Doge." A toddler blew bubbles and collected candy from people sitting along the curb who waved American Civil Liberty Union signs and chanted with the organizers. Some said it was their first time at a No Kings event, while others had been to all three. Many said they live in or close to Springfield, but others traveled from different areas in the state. Amber Odell, a Decatur resident, said she came to Springfield because the event was bigger than the one outside the Decatur Civic Center held at the same time on Saturday. "I'm here to protect my neighbors. I'm here to protect our country," Odell said. "I have never been so moved by the Star Spangled Banner in my life as I am these days. I appreciate my country more because of what we're going through." Casey Dawson, a Springfield resident, said she's been to each protest with her two friends. The three stayed up the night before making their signs, and her husband 3D printed earrings for them that said "No Kings" over a yellow crown. More than 3,000 protests were scheduled across all 50 states and internationally on March 28th, mirroring the October 18th protest that saw more than 7 million attendees in the nation. Illinois alone had over 100 planned from Chicago down to Carbondale. "I think it's important that we just keep showing up. We keep showing up and standing up for what we believe in," Dawson said. "I feel like there's a sense of unity when you come to these protests, that you feel you know you're not alone and you're all standing for the same reason." Nicole Hytrek, also from Capital News Illinois, writes, "Low-cost solar bill eyed. Lawmakers seek measure to make plug-in panels available to renters. A bill to make solar power more accessible to renters and others who face barriers to the alternative energy source is moving through the Illinois Senate. The plug-in solar bill allows people to install small solar panel systems that can be plugged into normal wall outlets for personal use. Instead of a rooftop, the panels could be set up on a balcony, in a yard, or on a porch or patio. Plug-in solar is exactly what it sounds like. Small, low-cost solar panels that plug directly into a standard outlet and help offset the energy use," said Senator Rachel Ventura, a Democrat from Joliet, who is the lead sponsor of the bill. "No expensive installation, no major construction, no waiting months for approval. Because most residential solar requires rooftop installation, people who live in apartments or who rent their homes have been unable to take advantage of solar power to cut down on electricity bills." Lawmakers said this was a major motivation for the bill. Under current Illinois law, people would have to get an interconnection agreement before using plug-in solar systems, but the bill removes that requirement. Customers who use a plug-in solar system would also not be required to get the electricity provider's approval before installation, or pay a fee related to installation, or install additional equipment. Illinois has been a leader in renewable energy, and this legislation keeps us moving forward by making solar more available, more affordable, and more achievable for everyone, said Representative Daniel Dydek, a Democrat from Buffalo Grove, the sponsor for the House version of the bill. Further, landlords and homeowners associations would not be able to ban or unreasonably restrict or regulate plug-in solar systems. Instead, users would only have to notify the electricity provider about the solar panel system within 30 days of installation. The law would require those providers to develop simple online notification forms. Right now, outdated rules are getting in the way, Ventura said. Senate Bill 3104 cuts through the red tape by exempting these small systems from the same requirements designed for large-scale solar. That means faster access, lower costs, fewer barriers for everyday people. These exemptions apply to small systems that usually have between 300 to 400 watts of power output, but the bill grants permission for systems up to 1,200 watts. Those would be subject to more rules. The greater rules kick in for systems with an output of 392 or more watts. In general, the bill allows for solar panel systems that are designed to be connected to a building's electrical system through an existing outlet, located on an exclusive use balcony, patio, yard, porch, or similar area, intended primarily to offset part of a person's energy consumption, and certified by a nationally recognized testing laboratory. Plug-in solar systems are also normally include batteries, which allow people to save excess energy to use later in the day and avoid using the grid power. For safety, the systems have built-in protections like automatic shutoffs in case of power outages. This is a carefully designed policy that makes sure we're preserving safety while updating rules that were written for these large rooftop systems. It removes this one-size-fits-all regulatory approach, said Kavi Chintham, Illinois campaign manager for Vote Solar, a nationwide organization that seeks to reduce barriers to solar power. Utah is the only other state to have passed plug-in solar legislation, but lawmakers in multiple other states like Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and New York have introduced bills. The bill passed in the Senate Energy and Public Utilities Committee on March 12th and is now waiting on an amendment to address questions and concerns from utilities and labor unions. Olivia Jacobs with the Pantograph writes, fantastic grandstand performers announced. Ashley Cook, Cameron Marlowe to co-headline event. Ashley Cook and Cameron Marlowe will co-headline the Daquan State Fair on Sunday, August 30th. Marlowe, a Nashville singer-songwriter who is originally from Kannapolis, North Carolina, first gained traction with his self-written single, Giving You Up, and followed it up with his debut album, We Were Cowboys. He has earned multiple RIAA Gold and Platinum certifications and more than 1.2 billion streams worldwide. He has also toured alongside fellow country artists such as Lainey Wilson, Thomas Rhett, Riley Green, and Morgan Wallen. His latest single, 17, can be heard currently on country radio, according to a news release from fair organizers. Cameron Marlowe and Ashley Cook are two of the most exciting voices in country today, said Jerry Costello II, Illinois Department of Agriculture director, in a news release. We're proud to continue to bring outstanding talent to the Daquan State Fair. Cook is considered a breakout country artist who caught national attention with her debut album, Shot in the Dark, and winning the 2024 Breakthrough Female Video of the Year at the CMT Music Awards. She earned her first number one country radio hit with Your Place, the news release said. She has been nominated multiple times for New Female Artist of the Year at the Academy of Country Music Awards and for Best New Country Artist at the iHeartRadio Music Awards. She has performed at the Grand Ole Opry and Ryman Auditorium and has toured with other country artists like Luke Bryan, Jordan Davis, Cole Swindell, and Brett Young. Her latest project, Ace, features 9 deeply personal tracks. This is going to be a fantastic night for country music fans at the grandstand, said Luke Davison, fair manager, in the release. With two incredible performers sharing the stage, fans can expect a high-energy show and a memorable night at the fair. Tickets go on sale at 10 o'clock a.m. on Friday, April 3rd, via Ticketmaster. Tickets range from $30 to $40. The Daquan State Fair will run August 28th through September 7th. The other acts announced so far include Night Ranger on September 4th and Russell Dickerson on September 5th. You can visit dsf.illinois.gov for more information. Jerry Vogler, superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Administration, writes the coroner, Agent Orange linked to bone marrow cancer. The VA's list of presumptive conditions for Agent Orange exposure is a long one, but many Vietnam War veterans will tell you it's far from complete, even after the PACT Act added more. The list includes cancers from lymphoma, multiple myeloma, and Hodgkin's lymphoma to non-cancerous conditions like Parkinson's disease. However, cancer research never stops. One group of researchers reviewing myelodysplastic syndromes, or MDS, patient data from the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute's MDS Natural History Study found a link between MDS cancers and Agent Orange exposure. MDS is a group of bone marrow cancers that can progress to acute myeloid leukemia. The researchers found that more than 54% of MDS or related patients showed a history of Agent Orange exposure, compared to 37% of those who were not exposed. Those patients with MDS who had been exposed were diagnosed much younger than those patients who were not. VA currently requires a veteran who files a claim for MDS must prove a direct service connection through medical records and service records indicating their exposure. Veterans exposed to Agent Orange who develop MDS or related medical problems may benefit from this study conclusion if the VA declares MDS is a presumptive disease caused by Agent Orange exposure. Browse MDS and Agent Orange exposure for more information. The Veterans Corner column began in 2023, spreading the word about a new technology at the VA to improve outcomes for diabetic patients with lower limb circulation problems. The VA introduced the Smart Mat program in 2018 at limited locations, usually at VA full medical centers, not the smaller clinics. The remote temperature monitoring program uses the Smart Mat technology, where veteran stands on the mat and infrared technology is used to create images of the temperature at different locations on the feet. The latest improvements to Smart Mat include sending the image automatically through Bluetooth to a VA podiatry staff member for review. According to the VA, the imaging results identify hot spots of concern about 5 weeks before a diabetic foot ulcer appears. If you have diabetes, discuss with your VA primary care provider or the podiatry staff to see if the Smart Mat might be right for you. Browse VA Podiatric Smart Mat for more information. Next, we have eligibility for VA health care is still restricted for some veterans because their income is greater than the VA income means test. This income-based denial was implemented in 2003 and still blocks thousands of veterans from VA health care for which the veteran would otherwise be eligible. The PACT Act, recognizing the potential for medical conditions caused by toxic exposures to develop medical disease or conditions even decades after exposure, helped some veterans who were denied health care access because of the income means test. A veteran who believes they were exposed to toxic substances while serving in the military should request a toxic exposure screening at their local VA. Generally, if such exposure is affirmed, the VA will likely approve VA health care for that veteran. Remember, current medical conditions may have been caused by exposure decades ago during your military service. Browse the VA Toxic Exposure Screening for more information about getting the screening at the VA. And the quote of the day is from Michael Josephson. Character is not only doing the right thing when no one is looking, it's doing the right thing when everyone is looking. It's being willing to do the right thing even when it costs you more than you want to pay. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 31st, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.